Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. I hope you had a wonderful Independence Day weekend. Today is my conversation with a trans Marxist with a very squeaky laugh about American history, Marxism, and more. It's brought to you by Turning Point USA. I get a little heated in this debate. I do sometimes, but he was really upsetting me. But I think you'll enjoy it. You can email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Clips from this debate have gone totally viral, millions and millions of views. And so if you enjoy a collision of ideas and a debate back and forth, then this is the conversation for you. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And support the Charlie Kirk Show by taking out your podcast app and typing in Charlie Kirk Show and hitting subscribe in the upper right-hand corner. Start a Turning Point USA chapter today at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. I hope to see all of you at our Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. We have the biggest speakers in the entire movement that will be there. It's incredible. You got to check it out. And so we have Kayleigh McEnany, Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham, Josh Hawley, Greg Gutfeld, Donald Trump Jr., Kimberly Guilfoyle, Kat Timpf, Pete Hegseth, Byron Donalds, Ben Carson, Rick Scott, Lauren Boebert, Governor Kevin Stitt, Kat Kamick, Matt Gaetz, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Dave Rubin, Sean Foyt, and more. And then we also have Turning Point Action hosting Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. Go to tpusa.com/SAS. If you've never been there before, it's an immersion experience unlike anything else you'll ever go to. tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. If you're young, come. If you're old, you got to go. tpusa.com/SAS. Buy your ticket today. Get engaged. Get involved. tpusa.com/SAS. It's going to be amazing. Student Action Summit. Do not miss it. Tampa, Florida, 22nd, 23rd, 24th of July, tpusa.com/SAS. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com.
Welcome to another episode of Debate Night. We're joined by founder of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, and contributor for the Young Turks, Ben Carallo. Tonight's topic is Marxism in America. First question, Ben. Please provide your best definition of Marxism and what you believe about the topic at hand.
Yeah, most definitely. See, when it comes to Marxism, a lot of people have misunderstanding, think that it's about particular policies. But the reality is that it centers on the role of the state, a belief that the state is an institution that exists to suppress the interests of one class or another, right? Either under capitalism, that it would be the dictatorship of capital, where capitalists suppress the interests of workers to the benefit of their profits. Now, under Marxism, the state serves the purpose of basically serving the interests of workers to the benefit of, to the benefit of the workers to suppress the interests of the capitalists. Because, obviously, the very nature of capitalism is to lower wages, increase prices, and this has an inherent contradiction that basically squeezes the working class and inevitably squeezes the capitalists themselves by leading to things like inflation and market crashes. So, really, the central theory of Marxism is a belief in a state that works to serve the interests of the working class, to suppress the interests of capitalism, and eventually get to the point where the need of the state itself is irrelevant.
Okay. How much of that do you believe?
Oh, 100%.
All of it. So you're just like a full-fledged Marxist?
100%.
So everything Marx wrote?
I mean, not necessarily every single word.
Well, just so I can understand, just so we can make this constructive. Like, just tell me your political philosophy when it comes to Marxism.
Well, I think that really is my philosophy. And we really have to look at, like, not necessarily Marx, who's the theoretician, right? Not even necessarily Engels. We also have to look at the practitioners of Marxism, right? So those people being, like, obviously Lenin, Mao, today.
Oh, you're a big fan of Mao?
Mao's a pretty interesting character.
How many people did he murder?
How many people did he murder? I mean, how many people do you think he murdered? How many people did George Bush murder?
45 million, more or less.
And what are you getting that number from?
How about the Chinese people themselves? Rough calculations of international organizations.
Mass graves. What do you mean, the Victims of Communism Fund that literally puts out Nazi propaganda on a regular basis?
I'm sorry, wait. The Victims of Communism Fund is a what group?
Puts out Nazi propaganda. They literally have a statue. I mean, you have to be joking, right? You realize in the USSR, they list Nazi war deaths as victims of communism.
Hold on a second. You're pro-Lenin, too?
Yeah, I mean, Lenin did a lot of really great things for the USSR. They literally brought what was a feudal peasant society to be a major world superpower.
How about the Ukrainian famine? How was that?
What about the Ukrainian famine?
Like the 6 million people Lenin intentionally killed through forced starvation and famine?
I mean, it's pretty ridiculous to frame that as intentional, right? Like, let's be real, right? There was a famine, and we can argue about the mismanagement of famines, but capitalists have mismanaged famines all the time.
Hold on a second. What is a kulak?
Potato famine.
What's a kulak?
What do you think a kulak is?
I know what a kulak is. You tell me. You're the Marxist.
No, I want to know what you think.
A kulak is someone that owned a certain piece of land that was not allowed to own that same piece of land because of Lenin and Stalin's government. And if they had owned more than it, what happened to them?
And do you know when... Okay, let's...
No, just answer the question. I'm curious.
What did happen to them?
They went to a gulag. Do you believe those exist?
Yeah, 100%
gulags. How many people died in the gulag?
Do you know what a gulag is?
No, just like more or less. I just want to know.
Do you know what a gulag is?
Yeah, a forced labor camp. Or it could be a forced death camp.
You mean like the forced labor camps we have in the United States of America, which, by the way, the United States has more people under forced labor than any other country.
Where?
In our federal prison system.
How'd they get
and
to
our state
wait, hold on.
Prison
How'd they
system.
Get to prison?
They committed crimes.
Oh, okay, so it's not forced. They made a choice.
Are you familiar with the...
Wait, no, what's that? That's a phenomenal red herring argument you made. I'm just curious.
No, it's not
just,
a red herring.
I just want to know, how many people died in the gulags?
No,
more or less. I'm just curious.
How many people died in American prisons?
Hold on a second. I'm just curious. Gulags, how many people died? I'm just curious. Give me a number. 10 million, 15, 20, 25 million, 30 million?
You know, there's this really amazing anecdote. It's really interesting. You see, and
100,000? I want a number, more or less.
Listen. Because let's talk about how they get these numbers, right? This is a perfect example. There's this really great story, right, where, you know, you have Winston Churchill talking to Stalin. He's like, hey, how many people died in the famine? And Stalin, obviously not wanting to talk about it, they had bigger things to deal with, you know, like World War II. He puts his hands up. And Winston Churchill walks away and says, oh, yeah, that means 10 million. He must mean 10 million. Now, we can obviously talk about mismanagement of famines, but if we're going to talk about mismanagement of famines, why don't we talk about the people in India that Winston Churchill killed? Why don't we talk about
the people that died? Yeah, so we're not here. I'm happy to do a whole defense of the greatest man of the 20th century, Churchill. I'm not going to actually do that right now. So was Alexander Solzhenitsyn a liar?
I don't know who that is.
You're kidding me. You're a Marxist that don't know. You do not know who Alexander Solzhenitsyn is. He wrote a book called The Gulag Archipelago, which was a first-person account. He actually was in a gulag.
Come on.
And you don't even know who he is.
You know that people that worked on it admitted that they just made up a lot of those numbers, right?
He lived in one, my friend.
There's a lot of people who lived in the gulags. In fact, there's a really great...
Yeah, and so they're liars?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of
okay,
people
so,
that lie about
so,
communism
so,
on a daily
let me get
basis.
This right. Let me get this straight. So the pastor who spent a decade in a forced labor camp with 1 hour of sunshine a day, Joseph Bondarenko, he lied about that?
I mean,
because he wanted to just spread the gospel. I'm curious just kind of like what your belief is on gulags. So we can just have like a similar.
Okay. I'll tell you, I'll give you a really great example, right? And you see the CIA actually ran numbers on this. This is really interesting. So somewhere around 10% of the people, right, that like were in the gulags during their peak, which by the way, was after a civil war in Russia, right? Obviously with the white army that they had to deal with, right? And then the World War II with Nazi Germany, right? Were political prisoners, but this is really interesting, right? I believe it was in the Gorbachev years, they tried to do a big reformation and granted a huge amount of amnesty to like tons and tons of people that were in those gulags. And do you know what happened, Charlie? Do you know what happened after that? This is something that the CIA documents literally
You mean after the liberalization of the USSR
no, no, no.
or what?
What happened to the people that were let out of those gulags?
They wrote books like The Gulag Archipelago that brought down the
most of
USSR.
Most of them actually ended up right back in those same gulags because, this is to be very, very clear, that's their normal prison system. That is the normal prison system that they had. Just to be clear. Because who do you think set up the gulags?
So you're trying to tell me that the people that were put in the prisons were not political prisoners?
No.
So what happened to the Mensheviks?
Most of the people.
What, the forced imprisonment of the Mensheviks?
Most
so tell me
of
what
people.
How did Trotsky die?
What do you mean, assassination?
Who killed Trotsky?
Look, look.
No, no, tell me, who killed Trotsky?
Are we gonna talk about economic theories?
We will. No, I'm just curious, just like, because I'm just trying to understand. You say you're a Leninist.
I mean, who killed Salvador Allende?
So 66 million people died in the gulags, rough estimation. Does that not concern you?
I mean, most of those numbers are inflated. Like, you got to really understand this. Like, the reality is that was their normal prison system. If you look at the mortality rate in the gulags compared to the mortality rate in American prisons at the same exact time.
So let me ask you this. How many people died in the Holocaust, would you say?
I don't know. I'm not a Holocaust expert.
How about like 8 million? Would you say that's fair?
So I know at a minimum there's 6 million Jews that died.
Okay, so why are those numbers accurate yet the gulag ones aren't?
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up because the truth of the matter is if you look at the people, right, if you look at the like denazification of Western Europe, what you end up having is you have a lot of people like, for example, right, like Nazi government officials that get put in charge of West Germany. Right. Then you have Nazi officials that get put in charge of institutions like NATO. And then you have a lot of these Nazis that quite literally set up institutions. Right.
Like, put out information. Like name one person.
Look at the first commander of NATO. Literally. Look at the first NATO commanders. They literally brought in people from Nazi Germany. Are we going to pretend that Operation Paperclip is not a thing that the United States did?
Operation Paperclip was in conjunction with Operation Mockingbird, which was a CIA propaganda campaign, which I don't quite answer the question of the accuracy of gulags. Anyway, that's a little bit of futile. I'm just trying to understand, though, like maybe we're just on different planets here, quite honestly, because I've actually met countless thousands of people that were in these gulags and their stories and their firsthand perspectives, and they did nothing wrong to be put in there except they had the different political viewpoints or they were pastors. And then you embrace a political worldview that does that.
Well, let's take this for example. Let's imagine that you're a serial murderer in the USSR, right? Let's imagine. And then you go to the gulag, right? What's that?
I'm not imagining. I'm talking about pastors. I'm talking about
No. People that have. This is the reality. Because like, if you want to talk,
it's not the reality.
There's
plenty
of documentaries. Like, look, for example, right? For example, okay.
So I'm just going to
make Radio Free Europe. So did this really great interview session where they literally went to people that were in these gulags, and it was so funny because when Radio Free Europe puts out this video about these people who used to live in the gulags, they asked them, what did you think about Stalin? And they basically said, because remember, right? You remember that the USSR was invaded by the Nazis, right? And you also remember that.
Yes, and then they deterred the invasion.
You
but
also
what
remember
that
the USSR they almost wiped out all of Ukraine. You also realize
the Civil War was between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks because they couldn't determine what blend of communism they wanted after they overthrew the Romanov dynasty, right?
But you also had the White Army. Do you know what the White Army is?
I'm very familiar with the White Army.
You know, the royalists, the people that were
yes,
trying to.
Yes, of course. But okay. I just, I'm like, just, so, so we'll hold close
so
on
if
this
you
topic.
The Civil War,
but
are you going to put
people in jail? I just
want to
reinforce for the audience here,
if they start
which
a civil
is
war in your country.
You,
I know the United States doesn't like to jail insurrectionists.
Remarkably,
that's what they did in the U.S.
Just made an argument that was pro gulag, and
yeah, they had a prison system. That's correct.
It kind of does explain some of your other views because we're just living on different planets, like Team Reality, Team Narnia.
So how is our prison system better?
Hold on a second. For example, you got a lawyer. We have an independent judiciary. You have a jury of your peers. You know what a show trial is? What is a show trial?
Judiciary.
Hold on. What's a show trial?
What's a show trial?
Yeah.
I don't know. Ask Stephen Donziger.
Who is General Tukhachevsky that Stalin took
off? Ask Stephen Donziger. You think the United States doesn't do show trials? Look at Guantanamo. What are those?
Hold on a second. What you're
Guantanamo
trying to do is indict the entire Western legal tradition and conflate it with the Leninist, Stalinist. We're going to kill half the population we don't like. Look,
you're trying to do is you're trying to take a country that had to deal with a civil war, that had to deal with an invasion, and compare that to the United States today.
I'll close with this. You are defending genocide, which is quite honestly a remarkable thing to see in real time.
Stop right here,
you are defending genocide of Joseph Stalin and Vladimir Lenin,
clear.
The intentional destruction and killing of 65 million people.
This is what I'm talking about.
And no, like, there's no middle ground in genocide. That's your opinion?
Look, free speech, religious liberty, and the Second Amendment. Our rights are being destroyed across the board. And look, many months ago, I told our team, I am sick of paying all this money to these cell phone providers that hate me and hate our values. So I said, go find that really cheerful guy. I think his name was Glenn at one of our events, and he kept on wearing the Patriot Mobile shirt. Found him, sat down in Dallas. We had a great meeting. And I vetted Patriot Mobile head to toe. Their business model, how they do things. and I was convinced that we must partner with them. They're not only America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider, they're one of the few companies fighting back. They offer the same nationwide coverage as the major carrier. So you get the same great service plus the peace of mind, and your money is combating the left's attempt to silence you. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer service. Patriot Mobile shares your values, and they support organizations fighting for religious liberty, constitutional rights, sanctity of life, like Turning Point USA, and veteran and first responder heroes. So here's how it works. If you have a big major carrier, you are funding the bad guys. That money might as well be a check, Democrat National Committee. Or you could have it go to Patriot Mobile, where they give their proceeds back to Turning Point USA, veterans, and amazing groups. It's a no-brainer. So go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code CHARLIE. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Between the left, the media, and all these rhinos, we need to stick together. Patriot Mobile helps you do that. It's a way to get engaged. It's a way to engage in the corporate warfare that's happening. So do me a favor, check it out. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. We've switched everything over, and we love Patriot Mobile. Producer Andrew is a massive fan. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Don't give your money to BLM or the Alphabet Mafia or whatever when you are doing the regular thing. Instead, make the switch. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie.
Moving on. Has there ever been a successful example of Marxist theory in action where the workers are truly empowered?
Yeah, 100%, most definitely. Like, so first and foremost, we have, obviously, the brave Vietnam soldiers that defended themselves.
The Viet Cong?
Defended themselves against the invading American army, which was basically there to punish them for daring to free themselves from French colonial rule.
Hold on. How did that work out?
And what do you mean, how did that work
out? Seriously, the Ho Chi Minh City under communist rule, better then or better now?
What do you mean, better then or better now?
Was Ho Chi Minh a better place under Viet Cong rule or better now under more kind of Western?
Who do you think is in charge of Vietnam right now?
I mean, it's a generally much freer country than it was 60 years ago.
Oh, that's weird. When did the Communist Party lose power in Vietnam?
Well, hold on. They've industrialized their country. They've opened themselves up to international trade. They actually have fair and free elections. Like, I'm not going to say Vietnam's a perfect country, but post-Viet Cong rule, standard of living has increased.
So you think
infant mortality has gone down.
You think maybe perhaps Agent Orange had something to do with some of the struggles he had? They think that maybe the sanctions from the United States of America cutting off supplies to food maybe had something to do with
it. Okay, got it. So America's always the villain. So besides the Viet Cong, which is a new one, I'll be honest, where else has communism worked?
China. Look at China.
Okay, what about China works with?
Aside from the fact that China's the strongest economy in the world right now, there's obviously the fact that average wages in China have tripled over the past decade.
So before we go any further, do you really want to defend the Chinese Communist Party against me?
Sure.
Okay, got it. So Uyghur Muslims, how do you feel about them? So you're pro-concentration camp?
No, not pro-concentration.
Okay, so where are the Uyghur Muslims right now?
Do you know what the East Turkmenistan movement is?
No, don't change topic.
I'm not, this Uyghur, is the same topic.
Uyghur Muslims.
You don't know that the East Turkmenistan movement was labeled by the United States of America as a terrorist organization.
Oh, got it. Okay, so pro-concentration
inside
camp.
Of China.
Got it. What about
that's
the one-child policy for 40 years?
No. We need to stop right here. Because first and foremost, you pushed earlier the double genocide theory, which, no, by the way, Holocaust scholars have very explicitly...
You are pro-genocide, but anyway...
No. Stop right
saying
here.
Saying no doesn't make
the
it right.
The double genocide theory is literally Nazi propaganda. The whole idea was to say that the obvious, mismanagement of a famine, they're trying to equate that to the invasion and the mass murder committed by the Nazis. They're literally Nazis that intentionally push that theory. Why do you think that Israel, to this very day, actually has tensions with specific people in Ukraine who are pushing that double genocide theory? Because the truth is, a famine and the mismanagement of resources
mass graves, gulags, and all that. But let's talk about the CCP.
Genocide.
So let's talk about the CCP. So you're cool with the one-child policy?
It doesn't matter what I'm cool with. The reality is...
No. That was a policy of the CCP for years, where they would murder another child if you had more than one kid.
Look, what we need to understand is that China is a democracy. And they are going to make laws off of their
How are they a democracy exactly?
Are you kidding me? Aside from the fact that the central government has a 95% approval rating, which, by the way, before you're like, oh, but
have you been to China?
No.
No, no, no.
No, of course.
Oh, so you must be a subject matter expert.
I'm not.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So, no. Okay, so they're a democracy. Do they have senators or congressmen
what does it
in
take?
China?
Well, there's about 1,000 members of their National People's Congress. And then obviously they have a system of local people's congresses.
And so you don't think those elections are rigged?
I'm going to test you. What does it take to get on the ballot in China?
What is it? A lot of money, power, and influence, and killing the right people.
Oh, that's weird, because it's actually illegal to spend money on campaigning in China. There's actually
you think that a dissident Chinese person could run up against Xi Jinping right now? So let me ask you a question.
How do you think
it's okay?
How do you think elections work? How do you think elections work in China?
It's very simple. You're born into the right family. You have connections to the right people.
You can't answer.
What's Xi Jinping's lineage?
What does it take to get on the ballot in China?
You have to have the right connections. Yes, I do.
No.
I do know. You can't just all of a sudden pop up.
Have you read the law? Have you read their law?
What happened to Tank Man at Tiananmen?
No. Hold up, you think the law actually
applies?
Here's the chat. Okay.
So what happened to the Tiananmen Square?
Listen, this is the answer.
What happened to Tiananmen Square?
This is the answer that Charlie Kirk doesn't know because he has no idea how democracy works.
What happened to Tiananmen Square?
You need to get 10 signatures to get on the ballot in China. That's it. 10 signatures. How many people does it take to start a recall in China?
How many temples do they destroy in Tibet?
How many?
So you think you could recall Xi Jinping?
How many people do you think it takes to
you
get
understand,
a recall?
I have to be honest. You are such an unbelievable fool to believe that China actually has a democracy.
Well, look, here's the thing. They've tripled their average wages. They've eliminated extreme poverty. They have a mass popular support in China. They have the strongest economy in the world. And right now, they are...
How many people live in abject poverty in Western China? More people than the population of America do not have access to clean water or toilets, and that's your idea of lifting people out of poverty. Let me ask you this question. 26 million people forcibly locked down in Shanghai. Cats are being put into entire bags and murdered. If you have COVID, that's your idea of a good society? 26 million people being forcibly locked down in China at a moment's notice?
How many people are permanently disabled because of COVID in the United States? How many people died in the United States?
I don't know. Ask the country that designed the virus, your favorite country, the CCP.
You think they designed the virus?
Where did it come from?
What do you mean, where did it come from? Like you
where did the virus
so
come from?
So you're peddling conspiracy theories. Look, I
don't
know.
What country did it come from?
I have a master's degree in biosecurity and biodefense.
Oh, so you must be so smart. Where did the country come from? Where did it come from?
Here's the thing, Charlie. Listen up. Did you know that there were American scientists working in that lab?
Oh, what's the name of the lab?
In the Wuhan
lab.
Oh,
so it came from China.
It came from China, yeah.
Oh, so it's the Chinese virus.
No, it's not the Chinese
virus. What country did it come from then?
How many strains of coronavirus are there? Like, how many types of coronavirus are there?
There's plenty. There's Omicron, there's COVID-19, there's the original strain, but it was originally developed.
No. See, you've listed three. The reality is there's different types of coronaviruses that exist in the world that aren't developed anywhere. Like cats have their own coronaviruses.
No, of course, but which one was developed in the lab in China?
Dogs have their own coronaviruses. There's no, like, you think that the American scientists that were working in that same lab right next to those Chinese scientists, you think that they were secretly malicious
actors? No. See, you're putting words in my mouth. Hold on. Did it come from a lab or not? Or did it come from a Himalayan bat lab?
No, of course it didn't come from a lab.
Oh, you think it didn't come from a lab?
No, yeah, because I live in the real world.
You understand that every single person worth their salt looks at the strain and they understand that this was bioengineered in a lab. Fauci himself agrees
to
that.
What do you think would tell me? Because apparently you're the biologist here, right?
I do know what a man and a woman is. Do you?
Tell me the difference. Between how do you tell the difference between a man-made virus and a non-man-made virus?
There's a lot. Sequencing, everything from how it's compiled, mRNA-type technology.
What type of sequences are you looking for? According to Anthony Fauci's
own emails to Hugh Albatross on January 31st, on Friday evening, he said, quote, this has every single marker of a man-made laboratory-created virus. That's Anthony Fauci's own declassified emails to the CDC and the NIH. Not to mention the thousands of other scientists that have looked at the strain, and they say the way that the proteins are correlated, the way that this is put together.
What do you mean proteins are correlated?
The way that is put together.
You're just throwing words together.
Hold on.
This is a word.
Okay, my language might be a little sloppy, but the people that understand the actual sequencing of the protein.
You didn't go to grad school, and you don't know what you're talking about.
Hold on a second. So you think that, where did the virus come from then exactly?
What do you mean, where did the virus come from?
No, tell me where it came from.
Yeah, well, so this is really interesting, right? See, because the type of virus that it is, right, little RNA viruses, they recombine a lot. That's one of the really interesting things about these types of viruses. And so what happens is when you have a couple of different strains that infect the same species at a time, the way that the way way the virus reconstructs itself, which, to be clear, we don't necessarily have a full understanding of how exactly that happens. But the reality is one of the central theories is this random assortment process where if you have multiple strains of a virus that is infecting one thing at a time, which is one of the reasons why bats in particular, because they're capable
I have a question. Are you on CCP payroll? Because I don't think like a sane individual could believe this.
I wish. You think I got that kind of money?
Oh, he wants to be a CCP agent.
You think China is funding me? That's so disconnected from reality.
No rational person could believe the stream of absolute nonsense that you are. You'd have to be paid for this. Like, you're kind of like a walking hologram of insanity.
I don't know what to tell you, buddy. But I
just hope it's worth it.
It sounds more like you're talking into a mirror at this point.
No, actually, you're the one that's defending the murderous, genocidal CCP and the murderous, genocidal Lenin, Marxist.
Okay, tell me this then.
Yeah.
What was the biggest genocide that ever happened in world history?
The biggest genocide, and it depends how you define a genocide. I would say no. Stalin's intentional massacre or Mao's intentional massacre, 65 to 70, 70 million people.
I don't know, 70 million?
Yep, intentional death.
What about the 200 million people that used to live on this continent?
Oh, you mean the people that died of natural causes?
You think... Holy moly.
What 200 million people are you talking about?
You're indigenous.
You think there were 200 million people before we came here?
Yeah.
All living at once?
Yeah.
Where on earth do you get that number?
What do you mean? From anthropologists.
Oh, so you think we killed them all?
From anthropologists. Of course we killed them all.
So we killed 200 million people intentionally?
Yes. You think so? So just to be very clear, right? You're sitting here denying the genocide of indigenous folks.
Well, hold on,
you know who Teddy Roosevelt is?
Oh, you think Teddy Roosevelt's a mass murderer?
Yes, Teddy Roosevelt is a mass murderer. What do you think those Rough Riders did? Who do you think they were killing?
They won the war in Cuba.
What war?
What war? The war against the commies in Cuba. Wait, hold up.
They won war against communists in Cuba. Who's in charge of Cuba right now?
Well, the communists.
So they didn't win the war then.
Well, they won a battle.
They won a battle. Wait, we've gone from a war to a battle.
They won the Spanish-American War. They won the Spanish-American War.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question.
But who else did he go to war against?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt actually won a Nobel Peace Prize for brokering peace between Russia.
I don't care about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, you don't care about much. Honestly, that's real.
How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Iron Man thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now, ReliefFactor.com. You should order the 3-week quick start too. Discount only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now.
How are an individual's wants and needs represented best in a Marxist society?
I'll ask the commie.
Obviously through their democratic structure. Like, the reality is, right, this is the thing, right? Obviously going back to the role of the state to serve the interests of the working class, to suppress the interests of capitalists, which is exactly why people like Charlie Kirk obviously are very unsettled with it, because the reality is that in America, working class people have to worry about the government kicking down their door for doing things like smoking marijuana. But in China, it's not the working class people that have to worry about, you know, the government kicking down their doors. It's corrupt billionaires that have to worry about the government kicking down their doors. Just look, for example, giant tech companies making tons and tons of money in China with very little regulations. Well, what does China do? They put in tighter regulations on these tech companies, and then they take money from these tech billionaires, and then they give it to anti-poverty programs across the more rural parts of China in order to fund schools, food, things like that. Like, for example, China's this really, really great co-op development program, which is really, really great. So they combine ecological.
I can tell you don't even believe this, by the way.
They combine.
You've got to be acting at this point.
Why do you think I'm acting?
Because
is it because you're acting?
No, it's because the reality is so different of the millions of people in China that are literally forcibly held in their homes, the millions in concentration camps, the people that can't even breathe because the air quality is so bad. How about the underground Christians that are murdered in the streets for trying to go to church? So, no, continue on your
wait,
like, co-op in Beijing. Like, yeah, we could grow vegetables in Shanghai, so it's so great. Is that, that's kind of the argument, right?
Look, what are we talking about, vegetables in Shanghai? You're assuming that this is Shanghai. Obviously, Shanghai is like a giant urban city, right? The cooperative development, which is really cool, by the way. They're combining ecological restoration with these cooperative developments. So, and, you know, with the schools in there, they have a requirement that the schools buy a lot from the local farms, right? 60% of the food, right, that they serve in the schools basically comes from local farms. So if you talk about meeting people's needs, right, the farmers there have a need for, economic development, right? So if you buy from the schools, if you buy the food from those farmers, that puts money into their pockets, and then they literally take that food and give it back to the school kids so that the school kids can have a full belly while they're trying to learn. And it, like, this is the reality, Charlie. Like, you gotta understand, like, if you think China's so dystopian, how come the incarceration rate in the United States is so much higher than China?
Well, because we have a rule of law and they kill dissidents that break the rule of law. Tell me
Where are all these dead people then? Tell me about
Foxconn.
What about Foxconn?
What do you know about it?
What about, you mean, you mean the crony plot that basically bulldozed an entire town in Wisconsin, kicking people out of their homes for a factory that never happened?
In China.
What about Foxconn?
So do you know they have to put up nets to try to prevent people from jumping out of their buildings?
So an American company was treating their workers properly.
Hold on a second.
You know they took those nets down, right?
A Chinese Communist Party partnership sponsored by Xi Jinping himself and his entire regime. So when you go to China, let me just tell you, you'll drive down the street and you will see dead people laying in the middle of the street. You will see people defecating.
Go to China then. Go to China. Take a video.
Actually,
bring
you know
these
what?
Cameras. Go to China. Take a video with these cameras.
Unlike you, right now. My wife lived in China for 6 months, and she'll show you the videos. She'll show you the images. They don't have a regard for human life. They don't value people as the individual.
We're the ones letting people die of coronavirus.
Hold on a second. The reality of China is that if you disagree with the government, you disappear.
That's
like Jack Ma. Yeah, if you disagree, you disappear.
Oh, because that was his only thing. He disagreed. Or if you're a dissident group, like the Uyghur Muslims, you get put in re-education camps where we have drone footage
of people that are forced to eat pork against their religious conscience.
Are you talking about the East Turkmenistan movement?
No, I'm talking about the Uyghur Muslims that you're trying to spin in some sort of weird way.
So what do they do to Tibet, though?
No.
So the Associated Press actually went to Xinjiang, right? Which, by the way, anybody can go to Xinjiang if you want.
You know I'm not allowed into China, right?
Right? Okay, sure.
No, I'm not.
Right?
Then if I go to China, I get arrested. Great society.
Okay, cool. Then somebody else go. Because people did.
Oh,
somebody
from the Associated Press. It's a wonderful place, but Westerners aren't allowed.
Look, if you... You can. How come the Associated Press went to Xinjiang and asked the right journalists to go, but if someone like me were to show up in China... You think that the Associated Press is out there carrying water for China?
Hold on a second. The Associated Press also wrote in other articles that these were quasi-concentration camps.
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
yeah,
this is the thing.
Yeah,
like,
concentration
no, no, no.
camps,
like, this
great.
Is the thing. The
yeah.
Associated Press, fundamentally, is like this right-wing bias, right? Like, that's just ultimately the reality of the Associated Press. Because, right... Like, who are funding Western journalists? Where do Western journalists get money? Is it maybe through capitalist institutions that have, you know, like their own interests in these
things? How does NPR get
their money? Right? So let's think about this for a second. Right? So they, Associated Press actually goes and they write an article and they talk about it. Because the reality is if we want to live in the real world, we can have a conversation about whether or not China was going too heavy-handed in dealing with the East Turkmenistan movement, which is a terrorist movement. But a lot of Uyghur Muslims, even in Xinjiang, are happy that now they can finally drink alcohol without having to worry about bombing attacks and stabbing attacks. Now, we can have a conversation about whether or not they were too heavy-handed, about whether or not they're racially profiling.
The propaganda is insane.
The reality is...
Let's have a conversation about concentration camps. Like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be forcing them to eat pork against their religious conscience. You know, murdering a lot of them is probably wrong. There's really not a conversation to be had. Like, you're defending concentration camps. I think they're wrong.
If there's a major terrorist movement in the United States, how do you think we should respond to that?
A major terrorist movement. Well, they get, actually, I can tell you exactly how it happens. Like, when the Boston bombers tried to bomb in Boston,
That's an individual bombing. Okay.
Yeah. So when ISIS pops up, they still get, if they're American citizens, they get due process rights.
How do you think? Really? American citizens get due process rights. Tell that to all the Americans that we drone striked in the Middle East.
Hold on a second. No, wait. You mean Americans on American soil? That's what you asked. So it's not like a hypothetical.
Okay, well,
and I'm not going to keep on going down these weird rabbit holes, right?
Let's say we get a whole ISIS encampment.
I just want to ask what, if they're American citizens, they get due process constitutional rights.
That, do they? Really?
So, yeah, I mean, Timothy McVeigh got a
literally,
trial.
Literally, the Supreme Court
Ted Kaczynski,
just took away.
Ted Kaczynski just got a trial. The Tsarnaev brothers got a trial.
People's rights.
Do they not know?
Literally just took away people's
the
rights
Sandy
to present
Hook shooter
new evidence in their appeals.
But the Parkland shooter got a trial. The Buffalo shooter gets a trial. We know that, Maria.
Yeah, because they're white supremacists. Of course, white supremacists are going to get a
what
trial.
What about the Tsarnaev brothers? The Tsarnaev brothers, the Boston bombers, did they get a trial?
Yeah, they got
a
trial.
Okay, so you just disproved your own point,
Marina.
You're
talking about individual terror.
Where does cultural Marxism fall under your ideology?
Cultural Marxism is literally a Nazi conspiracy theory. Like literally the Nazis in Nazi Germany invented the phrase cultural Marxism. The fact that you're asking me about it is a pretty telling to who you are.
Oh, you think I'm a Nazi?
Most definitely. I mean, at this point, like, you've made it pretty clear.
Why am I a Nazi?
You're asking me questions about cultural Marxism. That's literally, like, so in case you don't know.
So let me ask you, who's Antonio Gramsci?
Okay.
Gramsci.
Antonio Gramsci.
Who is he?
Why are you bringing Gramsci into this?
No, but just tell me who he is.
The Italian socialist.
Yeah. So what phrase did he coin?
I don't know. You tell me.
Cultural Marxism.
Oh, okay.
Was he a Nazi?
Okay. No, Antonio.
Oh, so maybe it didn't come from the Nazis.
Okay, literally. Look,
why would you say something so false when Gramsci himself came up with the phrase?
Do you know what the conspiracy theory is around cultural Marxism and why it got so popular in Germany in the 1930s?
So let's go back to Gramsci. What did he write about cultural Marxism?
I don't know.
Letters
I'm
from
not
prison.
Familiar with all of his
Yeah,
writings.
You're not familiar because you just keep on spouting out these things that call people Nazis, which is super unhelpful and not true. And so, yeah. Antonio Gramsci from prison said that Marxists must adopt a cultural framework alongside an economic framework in order to get the means of what they want to get done. That's not a conspiracy theory. Just read his book.
Okay, but that's different than the phrase cultural Marxism.
How is it
which
different?
Is used. What do you mean? How is
it's
it different?
Exactly the same thing.
No, it's not exactly the same thing. So what happened is in Nazi Germany, they spread this theory called cultural Marxism. They literally had this theory that Jewish people were secretly like bringing Marxist theory into the mainstream. And literally
that's
like,
not at all what anybody on the right talks about.
Are you kidding me? What about the guy who literally just murdered a bunch of people talking about great replacement theory?
Oh, you think
you're
he's
telling
on,
me that Tucker
you,
Carlson you think, doesn't talk about that on
no,
a regular
no,
basis?
No, hold on a second. So, first of all, the Buffalo shooter is disgusting and it's awful. And he was more of like a weird leftist than anything on the right. If you actually read what he wrote, he called himself a left-wing authoritarian, which sounds more like you, by the way, than me.
Look,
let me finish talking.
The Nazis pretend to be on the left too, buddy.
Secondly, what is cultural Marxism? Cultural Marxism is developing a cultural framework of deconstructionism or postmodernism to try to break ourselves from the shackles of the Western tradition so that we can embrace the nonsensical economic ideas that you believe in. That's not a conspiracy theory, it's reality. And it was written by Gramsci himself. And if you're not familiar with those writings, well, then you're not really equipped to talk about cultural Marxism. You just keep on like, conspiracy theory. Like, yeah, actually, you're wrong. Like, go to the roots.
Sure, buddy. Sure.
Is that your response?
Sure.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Charlie. How do people in a Marxist society overcome oppression?
Yeah, well,
they leave.
Okay, sure.
So why don't you live in a Marxist country? I'm just curious.
Why don't I live in a Marxist country? Well, I mean, aside from the fact that I was born here and I would like the United States to be a better place, the reality is, like, when it comes to overcoming oppression, I mean, just look at, once again, Vietnam, right? Vietnam invaded by the United States. Is that not oppression? Or what about North Korea, for example? In North Korea, we killed one out of every five people in their entire country. Is not the very minimum of evicting colonizers and evicting imperialist armies.
Hold on a second. Why did we invade Korea?
Why did we invade Korea?
I'm asking you.
No, you tell me. Because the truth of the matter is their economy, first and foremost, they were obviously Imperial Japan was occupying Korea. Then you have the socialists that liberate Korea from Imperial Japan. Then you have all of these powers coming in the middle of Korea at the end of World War II and ended up splicing it up. So the reality is one of the reasons why we invaded Korea is because we were deeply upset that anybody anywhere in the world would be socialist. Because do you think Korea is going to invade the United States?
Well,
do you think right after World
War II,
let me
ask you a question.
They were about to invade.
Where is it a better place to live? Seoul, South Korea or Pyongyang, North Korea?
I don't know. It depends on who you are.
you believe there's not even a question of who, like an average everyday worker, Pyongyang, North Korea, or Seoul, South Korea, right now.
It really depends on who you are. Ask poor people in South Korea how they're feeling about their system of government.
They are kissing the ground every day that they are.
Why are there so many defectors that defect from North Korea that then defect back to North Korea?
Name one.
What do you mean? I'm not going to list them off by name.
Name one.
Well, you can just Google it.
Oh, you can Google it. Have you ever heard of Yemeni Park?
Yeah.
What about her?
Do you want to know
Young lady whose father was murdered, she was sold into sex slavery, barely escaped to China, came to America to tell us what's really going on in North Korea?
Okay, buddy. Like, why is she doing conferences with, the Heritage Foundation?
Because she'll go to anyone that will listen to her firsthand perspective. So
okay,
hold on a second.
Or maybe perhaps.
North Korea is
hear
a...
Hear me out. Did you know that there's, a whole game show in South Korea where they bring on defectors and they're incentivized, right? The more, over-the-top their story is, right? The more they get paid, right? And the more they keep getting brought on these shows. So the reality is, nobody's going to say that North Korea is a perfect place to live. Nobody's going to say that.
No,
right? Nobody's
hell.
Going to say that there aren't terrible things.
It is hell.
But the reality is, there's explicit financial incentives for people to inflate stories about North Korea.
Let me give you an example that isn't a financial incentive.
Okay, sure.
You look from space at night on South Korea and North Korea. North Korea is dark, and South Korea has lights all over.
Do you think that has anything to do with the sanctions that the United States has on North Korea?
It's North Korea that has imposed a lot of sanctions on the West as well. They develop nuclear technology against us.
Sure.
North Korea could make some choices against us immediately.
Who are their major economic trade partners?
China? Iran?
Okay. Two. You've named two.
Yeah, China and Iran. That's about it. No one else really trade. They're
the
a pariah state.
Why?
Why is North Korea a pariah state? Because they murder their own citizens and re-educate them?
Or maybe because the United States
because they
has
have
gone
gulags all across
all
North
way.
Korea?
Maybe it's because the United States has gone out of its way to make sure that every country
but
that we deal with
this is
isn't
important.
Allowed to
trade with North Korea. Let's finish the point.
You
so
think maybe that has an impact
our,
on their economic
our trade? Intervention in Korea helped create South Korea and make sure that the entire Korean peninsula wasn't going to become
all of
North Korea.
What happened in South Korea in the 90s?
How
did they treat disabled people? Because here's the thing.
Let me finish.
They literally, you want to talk about concentration camps.
Let me finish.
South Korea was putting people in concentration camps. They were putting disabled people,
patently ridiculous.
Homeless people.
Let me finish. Thanks to America's intervention, 100 million South Koreans right now live in a free, democratic society. Absent America's intervention.
Their society's not democratic.
They would be all like North Korea, which they are poorer, they are unhappier. They have no freedom.
Do you support,
they have no
okay,
first
freedom? What about freedom of speech? Do you support the freedom of speech?
Do they have freedom of speech in Pyongyang?
Do they have freedom of speech in South Korea?
Of course they do.
Really? Why
versus
is it illegal?
Pyongyang.
No.
Of course they do.
It's actually illegal to say positive things about North Korea in South Korea. So I thought you just said they have freedom of speech,
of course
but you don't
they
even
have,
know basic
hold on,
laws.
Hold on a second.
You don't know basic laws.
There's a probably a pretty good reason for that, but quite honestly.
So wait, they have a good reason. So for example.
No, again, it's a general defense.
So you're against freedom of speech then? You're against freedom of speech.
Can you start new companies like Hyundai and Samsung? Yes. Can you empower entrepreneurs? Do you have the rule of law? Yes. All of that in South Korea. In North Korea, you can't own property. You can't say anything good, bad, or indifferent. You are silenced by force in North Korea.
And how come they have a lower incarceration rate than we do?
Who, in North Korea?
Yeah.
Oh, you trust the North Korean numbers. Everybody's
We're not talking about the North Korean
the
numbers.
Whole
if you look at,
country
the CIA's
is incarcerated.
You look
everybody
at the CIA's
is.
CIA's numbers about North Korea.
Everybody in North Korea is incarcerated
so you're just
by living
up platitudes.
No,
come
it's
on.
Not. The
yeah.
whole country's an open-air prison
okay,
state.
Okay, sure,
next
buddy.
Question.
Ben, is there room for religion in Marxism?
Yeah, most definitely. 100%. Like, for example, right? Let's take people like Fidel Castro, right? Fidel Castro is Catholic, right? And he was one of the best Marxists out there, right? There's a reason why people like
Slaughtered 15,000 people with firing squads. But
there's
yeah,
a reason
guy.
Why people like Nelson Mandela referred to him as an inspiration and a friend, right? So are you against Nelson Mandela? Do you think
part of
Nelson
it, part,
Mandela
part of his ideology
person?
Was terrible. He was a communist, but part of it was good.
Do you think, okay. So
but Nelson Mandela was a communist. I'm not going to.
Oh, okay.
He was.
Okay. So,
yeah,
so
I mean,
like the reality
his advocacy
is,
against apartheid was great, but his economic views were terrible.
There's actually a really great religious philosophy. I don't know if you're familiar with liberation theology, for example. Actually, one of the reasons why the CIA
it's a blend of
went
Catholicism.
Into places went yeah. into places like El Salvador to murder people was because liberation theology was so popular, right? Basically, the idea that under Christianity, right, Jesus was sort of the God who riots, right? Who goes out of his way basically to stand up for people who are oppressed, goes out of his way to stand up for people who are marginalized, right? He literally said, the meek shall inherit the earth. In fact, the only people that Jesus ever said wouldn't go to heaven were rich people.
He never said that. He said
it's a misquotation.
He said it's harder to get into heaven. But and by the way, if you go back to the actual Koine Greek, it is lover of money, not rich. But that's fine. You're not totally wrong.
Okay, right. So, like, the reality is, like, there are tons of different religions that are, like, completely compatible with Marxism, and there's nothing inherently against it. Now, Marx had specific theories about religion.
He said
and
it was the opiate of the masses.
Yeah, he said it's the opiate of the masses, which a lot of people misinterpret, right? See, what Marx meant by that was that, you know, religion plays a very critical cultural role in alleviating pain and suffering that marginalized people feel, which is very understandable, right? Like, if you're struggling in a very difficult world, like, obviously turning to religion, believing that there's a higher power, believing that even in your difficult circumstances, that if you work hard and you be the best person you can be, there's going to be an afterlife waiting for you, where you'll be able to live in peace, right? Like, none of that is contradictory to capitalism, but it is about the reality, or none of that is contradictory to Marxism. But it's central to this reality is the idea that so many people, they only have religion as an outlet for self-expression because capitalism forces people into such brutal conditions.
Capitalism forces people into what conditions?
Brutal conditions.
Such as?
Such as, are you kidding me? There's literally right-wingers out there that are calling for child labor to be brought back. Are we not going to talk about the way coal miners get treated in the United States of America?
The CCP, and they're like the heart of child labor in the world. So, like, look, don't give me that. Child labor is illegal in America. So how is that exactly the case?
Look, where was China 20 years ago versus where's China
poor
today?
And they got rich largely because
where's
we
China
offshored
today
our labor. So hold on, let's be very clear about the China stuff before I go back to another point I want to make. China got rich off of our deindustrialization and a massive labor arbitrage because they could undercut our wages.
And whose fault is that?
Of course it's our own fault. That's not the point. The point is that it wasn't because of the brilliance of Xi Jinping. It was because of the treachery and their ability to exploit their own citizens as pseudo-slaves to go make a bunch of plastic and fentanyl and bring it back into the West.
See, but this
they
is
don't
the problem.
Create new
this
stuff. The they don't start new companies. They simply
say,
we have more people.
Are you telling me that Huawei? Are you telling me Huawei
they're
is creating
new stuff?
They're a bunch of
thieves. They steal Western technology.
Sure,
yeah.
Buddy. Okay. Then who's sending vaccines all over the world?
Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, and Moderna.
Really? Because the United States is sending that many vaccines?
Well, I hope we don't send that many vaccines, but I mean,
like, okay, literally last year, China was sending half of all the vaccines that they made around the world. They were sending to other countries, like half of all the vaccines that they made. There's a lot of people that are vaccinated today, specifically because of the hard work and dedication of people in China.
I hope nothing happens to them.
Right?
I wouldn't trust the Chinese vaccine, let alone a Pfizer vaccine. But yeah, so I just want to get to this. I have a more interesting, I think more important question. Do you think human beings are naturally good?
Human beings are naturally social, right? Which means that human beings could be good or evil, right? The reality is that, like, what makes us good is also what makes us evil, right? Because the reality is, like, what would you do for your family, right?
A lot.
You would do a lot, right? I think we would all basically do anything for our families. And that is both what makes us so capable of goodness and kindness, but it's also what makes us so capable of vicious evil. Because the reality is, if we thought that people were threatening our families, we would do a lot of terrible things, right? But if we work together with other people and other families, and we extend our minds to understand that we have a shared sort of societal experience, then we're going to do a lot of good things for each other. So ultimately, when it comes to whether or not human beings are good or evil, we're just naturally social. We want to fit in and be part of a society. So ultimately, it really depends on the way society is structured that determines whether or not we end up being good or evil. But it is all basically from us being pro-social.
So why is it that every civilization encounters the same problems then, regardless of its circumstances?
What do you mean every civilization? What do you mean the same problems? What do you think these problems are?
I'll articulate it. From the Aztecs to the Incans to the Mayans to the Egyptians, the Indus River Valley, to the Chinese Empire, to the British Empire, Attila the Hun, to Genghis Khan, to Julius Caesar, to the Greek or Roman Empire, they all go through the same sort of cycle.
So
where they start to allocate power to a lesser and lesser group of people. They start to then create a pseudo-dictatorship under the false promises of empowering people. And then the cycle of selfishness, murder, strife, division, famine continues on end. And the only thing that ever broke that cycle was the West. The only thing that ever broke that.
Okay, A, how come the Iroquois Confederacy didn't have those problems?
Oh, so tell me about the Iroquois Confederacy and the great contribution to humanity they made.
I mean, like the United States Constitution?
Oh, you think that our Constitution is derived by the Iroquois Confederacy?
I mean, ask Benjamin Franklin. He would admit it very directly and explicitly.
He didn't write the Constitution.
It doesn't matter, right? All of the founding fathers.
No, it actually does matter.
Let me tell you.
If you actually,
ask James Madison.
Yeah. Let me get this. What Federalist paper is the Iroquois Confederacy mentioned in?
It doesn't matter. The Federalist
because
papers.
It really wasn't an inspiration.
Do you think the Federalist Papers were the only thing that were written back then?
No, but it was the most. Hamilton, Madison, and Jay went through private musings of why they wrote the Constitution. And
do you
and
think
defend
that
it?
They didn't care what Benjamin Franklin
Hold
or
on
George
a second.
Washington
so,
had
wait,
to say?
So I want to make sure I understand this right. So the Iroquois Confederacy, you think, is where we got separations of power, separation of powers, consent of the governed, independent judiciary, and consent of the governed, not the Pilgrim Colonies or the Bible or the Mayflower Compact or the Magna Carta. Or the writings of Augustine Aquinas,
of
Hume,
and
Burke, Locke.
None of the people that
Hobbes?
Were alive at the time. John Locke, look, where do you think where do you think these people said that they got their ideas? Like the reality is, why do you think the Enlightenment came after all of these colonizers started visiting people in North America?
Oh, so you believe in this like weird, unfounded, mystical belief that
it's not
we stole
this is
from the indigenous
like a,
people.
This is actually a very standard understanding of world history if you have even a marginal
Hold
understanding
on a second.
Of anthropology.
So you think that John Locke stole from indigenous people?
Are you kidding me? All of the Enlightenment philosophers stole from
all of
indigenous
them.
Folks.
So what did Kant steal from the indigenous people?
Like, are you kidding me?
The categorical imperative came from some tribesmen.
No, not the categorical imperative. They don't have to necessarily steal every single
that's
thing.
That's so let me get this. Machiavelli, what did he study? Because we didn't colonize when Machiavelli started writing. What did he steal?
Machiavelli's a really interesting character.
No, what did he steal from indigenous people?
I mean, I wouldn't say that, like, Machiavelli, to my understanding, he didn't really interact with people like indigenous folks in North America,
so nothing right? there. How about Aquinas? What did he study? What did he steal from indigenous people?
What do you think these people, like, this is the thing. This is the whole mythology of the
United
States.
No, but just build out your argument, please. Like, prove it. Like, give specifics because it's rather critical, right? So, like, what did Aquinas steal from indigenous people?
Like, okay, you're naming random people. I'm
no, they're
about
not random
fathers
people.
In the United States.
Okay.
Did Aquinas write the Constitution?
Aquinas inspired every single founding father. They all read it. They knew it backwards and forwards. John Adams said, no individual theorist or author was more instrumental to my metaphysical worldview than Thomas Aquinas.
That's because, look, are we going to ignore the fact that the founding fathers were incredibly racist? Do you think that they were?
Oh, okay, like, so you think they were racist?
Of course they were racist.
So then why did they try to abolish slavery?
Where did George Washington get his teeth?
Okay, so how many states decided to make the Northwest
territories? Answer this question. Where did George Washington get his teeth?
They were blended individuals, no doubt, mixed. But you know what you and I both have in common?
No. I want to answer the question because I want to make sure that your audience knows
I would assume
where
that
George
he probably
Washington
got
them, his teeth.
So to make him look bad, you're going to say he got them from a slave or he exploited somebody. But here's the truth about George Washington.
He ripped teeth out of people's heads while they were alive. He ripped teeth out of people's heads.
Here's the truth about George Washington
to put in his mouth.
Outside of your Nicole Hannah Jones highly emotive argument. Everybody has something in common. We're born into a world we didn't create. And every one of these founding fathers were born into a world where slavery was everywhere. By the time they died, it was on its way out.
Do you know
That's
what
an
Thomas
incredible
Paine said about
moral
slavery?
Good.
It wasn't on its way out when they were all dead.
Hold on a second. How many states abolished slavery by the time the Constitution
Do you know
was?
Paine
How many
said
states
about
abolished slavery?
Slavery
by 1787? 9 out of 13. So okay. A majority of states had already abolished it. Northwest Territories.
Why'd they structure the Constitution in such a way to give slave states more representation?
Happy to walk through it. How Northwest Territories, first act of Congress, free or slave area? Free. Unanimous. Article 6 of the Northwest Territory. First state to abolish slavery. Vermont, 1777, inspired by the writings of the Declaration. First anti-slavery convention, 1775, chaired by Benjamin Franklin.
When is slavery?
But George Washington
United
said, it's not a question of if, it's a matter of when we abolish slavery. Thomas Jefferson admonished King George in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence.
That means very
saying
little.
That slavery is a great evil that we blame King George
he
for.
He was also very
Thomas
angry.
Jefferson abolished
he was also very angry
the slave
at
trade
King
into
George
a, hold on a second.
For telling them they couldn't
One
keep
second.
Killing indigenous folks.
Thomas Jefferson said very clearly in the Virginia House of Commons in 1790 that we must abolish slavery. He abolished the importation of new slaves as one of his first act of president in March of 1807. The founding fathers fought
you
tooth and nail to abolish
policy?
Slavery. So you have a misrepresented, an
you know,
intentional
you know what happened
polemical
as a result
argument
of that?
To try to misrepresent the great heroes of the founding fathers.
When they banned
who
the importation
inspired,
of slaves, what happened?
What ended up happening was the slave trade went down, Eli Whitney creates the cotton gin, and a whole new debate of slavery gets reignited.
No, see, that's actually not true, right? The reality is, do you know what happened? The slave trade, I guess, went down, if you're talking about international trade. The United States set up literal farms where human beings were bred. Human beings were bred and forced to get pregnant,
slavery was going down dramatically in the
18-teens. Slavery.
18 teens, it's going down. 9 out of 13 states
that abolished it. Wait, we were talking about the 1770s, and now all of a sudden we're at the 18 teens.
Guess what? Thomas Jefferson was president in 1807. So you got to get your ears right, okay, before we talk about this. So he was sworn in March of 1807. He was governor of Virginia in 1790, wrote the Declaration in 1776.
So when did slavery end in the United States?
Great question. It began to end in 1777, a process of decoupling from an ancestral evil, where we have more people in the world right now that are slaves today than back then. The process began 1820s. The debate reignites because of John C. Calhoun, the creation of the cotton gin. We fight a war over it. We win the war and slavery is abolished. That's a pretty awesome track record for a country that inherited an evil that every other country prior to it had. It was the West that got rid of slavery. It was William Wilberforce. It was John Edwards. It was George Whitefield. It's easy to kind of do your thing like, well, it's terrible, it's bad. Yes, it's easy to call balls and strikes on a society you didn't create. It's easy to try to lecture the rest of the country. Be like, you know, these people are so terrible for something you didn't toil for or sacrifice for. Have an ounce of gratitude
for
what these people created and the country you get to live in.
It was the slaves that were toiling. They were slave owners. Also, by the way, slavery was never abolished. We literally have it in the Constitution to this very day.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's the 13th Amendment?
Thank you, gentlemen. Ben, we'll hear your closing remarks now.
Fundamentally, at the end of the day, the state can work to suppress the interests of capitalists, or it can work to suppress the interests of the workers. In the United States of America today, it is clearly suppressing the interests of workers. Just look at the difficulty that people have in terms of forming labor unions, demanding higher wages, even getting access to basic health care that even other capitalist countries have. Right? Then you have a lot of countries that have been the victims of colonialism, that have states that serve the interests of the working class people, and while they have a very difficult starting point, the reality is they are surpassing the United States now in a time frame that is rapidly outpacing the development that happened in the United States. So ultimately, the reality is we can choose for the government to serve the interests of the very rich few, or we can have a government that serves average working class folks.
So I just have one question. I'm sorry. Do you trust the government?
This government? No. But once again, we have to ask the nature of the state.
But then why would you want to make that government bigger?
No. It's not about making the government bigger. It's about changing the fundamental structure of the government so that it serves the interests of workers instead of the interests of capital. And in fact, this is one of the things that, like, the fundamental dishonesties that I think come from people like you. You point to a capitalist government, say, look, it's not working for workers. We should have less government and give capitalists more power. But the reality is, right, and this is the fundamental reality, that it's the nature of the government that's the problem. You're unwilling to admit the very fact that our government is fundamentally serving the interests of capital as opposed to serving the interests of the workers. And that if we were to flip the system on its head, it would work a lot better.
At its best, it's the opposite. It serves the function of the liberty of individuals, the pursuit of virtue. Yeah, I mean, look, in closing, human beings aren't naturally good. We're actually naturally awful to each other. And human history shows that. We have the same problems over and over again. And the government needs to be strong but small. And the founding fathers built that beautiful government that people like you are trying to destroy in a country that you refuse to leave. Here's how you know you live in a great country, that even those who say they hate it refuse to leave. Every person in China that would be given a chance to go out, almost every person would leave almost instantaneously.
Why don't they?
Because they're not allowed to.
Really? People move
Same
to the United
Cuba.
States from China all the time.
Those that are allowed.
What do you
very
mean
few.
Those that are allowed?
In Venezuela,
you're
in
just
Cuba,
banking
in
on
Iran,
people not knowing about
there
any
are
of these
millions
countries.
Of people that would do anything to leave these disastrous experiments. And I have met far too many victims of communism to take any of your arguments seriously. People that have the wounds to show it.
You mean
the pastors that were in jail for decades in the Soviet Union for doing nothing
like the
wrong.
Plantation owners that had their plantations
the
stolen by
like
Fidel
people like Alexander
Castro.
Schultz and Solzhenitsyn that wrote about it endlessly. The Cubans in Miami that had to build life rafts to save their own lives because of the oppressive Castro regime. The people from Venezuela and Cuba and Argentina. I'm going to trust them a lot more than a smug, sanctimonious person with a super bizarre laugh that read a couple things online that sound good. Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
Charlie, thank you. Ben, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.